You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, 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 everybody. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings, and welcome to another exciting episode of Around the Block, presented by Federal Prison Authority. Well, folks, we have an action-packed show for you today. Here in a second, we're going to talk about some topics, one being stacking, that I know that everybody's very anxious to hear. What is that? What isn't that? But we do have one little piece of news for you, and I'll let Susan do the honors about Morgantown's.
Gets to go ahead. So you may or may not, if you follow some of the posts from Director Marshall, he actually did a visit to Morgantown and decided that Morgantown was going to be an institution that we, you know, with previously on the closure list and is not going to be closed. I personally think that's a great decision. When it was first announced, I kind of was not a fan of that decision. I think Morgantown is ideally positioned as far as its location to provide service to both Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast region. And they also provide their proximity to the West Virginia University Medical System means they're able to provide services for less healthier inmates. They've got an established RDAP program. They do great work with vets. Veterans. And so I was really excited to see that. So,
yes. So shout out to Morgantown.
They were on the back end of the list. They were kind of going to be one of the later ones to close, but I'm glad that that decision's been reconsidered. So that's very exciting news.
That's very, very exciting news for a lot of families and inmates. And, plus, it just that's just a good, like you said, it's a good facility all the way around. So we're excited to see them get saved. Mm-hmm. So, all right, man, I tell you, first of all, I want to thank everybody for their calls. Thank everybody viewing the YouTube videos and the calls and the questions. And you know, from time to time, there's these trends in the questions we get asked. So this one trend is that there's this notion about stacking, okay, about stacking. Well, this new memo came out and it says they're supposed to stack and they're not stacking and what's going on. So Susan, I'll let you go ahead and start the explanation of like what the confusion is, why are folks kind of using the wrong words here when it comes to some of these. Yeah, go ahead.
So let's start with what are they specifically talking about when they're talking about stacking? They are talking about exclusively the FSA and SCA. So when they're talking about stacking, they're not talking about good conduct time. They're not talking about anything else. They're talking about this notion of the SCA and FSA. Now, even for individuals who are in halfway house under the SCA, there is still this stacking notion because the time credits were applied toward their early supervised release. And this is going to be rather, I'll preface this saying this is kind of complicated, but whether an individual is getting time credits toward early transfer to supervised release or early transfer to halfway house, Or the combination of the two, right? They have 300 days of time credits. They have 400 days of time credits, right? They don't have supervised release. They do have supervised release. All those different scenarios that can come up, right?
Yeah.
The one day people don't talk about is, and what you and I talk about in the book, is the maximum benefit date. The maximum benefit date is the date, the number of days and the date that is the total number of time credits. Whether those time credits are applied only toward early release, only toward pre-release placement, or some combination of the two, right? It's that maximum benefit date. So when they're talking about stacking, they're talking about a maximum benefit date and SCA, right? So in the case of an inmate with a short sentence, their release date is actually their good conduct time plus their time credits. And then the stacking is the SCA. So let's talk about the easy one, home confinement for inmates with short sentences, right? The reason when the director said about the authorities are cumulative and applied in sequence, it's because for a short person, short timer, and they're not earning 365 days, the Bureau is putting all of their time credits toward their earlier release, their earlier transfer to supervised release, I should say. So what happens is they have their good conduct time. Now their FSA authority is applied. Now their SCA authority is applied. It just so happens that their FSA time is tucking off their sentence. It's shortening that release date. They're still stacked, but you don't necessarily see it because you're in halfway house and you're in halfway house only on SCA because the FSA portion is part of the incarceration time, is part of the total sentence. Does that make sense?
It does. And just talk and reiterate about FSA credits are earned.
As you get them. They are not front loaded. Right. I saw a couple people talking this week on the Facebook page, using that dirty word front load. That does not happen with FSA. What people are seeing when they look at the public website and they see a date, if they're looking at their sentence computation, if they're inside and they're looking at their sentence computation, or they're in halfway house and they have a copy of their sentence computation and they see that good conduct time date, then they see their FSA credit, and then they see that FSA release date. Those days are still not official because the way the law was written. And in the case of folks who are getting less than 365 days, and all of that time is being applied toward their early transfer to supervised release,
right?
They can't apply it until the amount of time equals the time remaining to serve, which in their case is their release date. Technically, those days aren't even official until the very end of their sentence. But for the Bureau, they have to include them so they can figure out when they're going to send a person to halfway house.
So, yeah, even if, and I want to do an old school analogy. So let's say this is old school. You roll back to 1990, whatever you name the year. Let's say 90s.
We're dating ourselves.
It's okay. And inmate has this good conduct, a GCT date of 9-1, 2000 or whatever. Now they might have front loaded the 54 days a year, right? But it's still a projected release date, aka it's projected. I don't want to say conditional, but it's kind of conditional that the guy serves his time, doesn't get in trouble.
Technically, there are some changes though. So let's go back pre BICLA, so pre 1994. Yes, the Bureau projected all of that credit in. The only reason you could lose credit was to get in trouble, go to the DHO and be sanctioned.
Right.
But once you hit your anniversary each year, you vested those days. So your projected release date included what we expected you to get on the presumption that you were not going to get in trouble. But there was still a due process. You still had due process rights in order to, because there is to this day still with good conduct time, there is a liberty interest with regard to good conduct time, because good conduct time is statutorily tied to the sentence only. Now, back in the early 90s, pre-VICLA, it was, and this was, I always found kind of funny because Congress used to always say the Bureau misunderstood. Well, no, the Bureau didn't misunderstood. Congress wrote it wrong. So which was finally corrected. The Congress has been blaming the Bureau for decades, and they finally corrected it with the FSA. This is one of those smaller, little known changes. Like everybody focuses on time credits, and unless you were in the Bureau when FSA rolled out and our first thing to do, our first kind of staged implementation, was we had to change how Sentry calculated good conduct time. So prior to the change, an individual earned 54 days for each 12 months served. Right. And they had to serve the 12 months. It was then posted to their record. It backed them up by 54 days, and then they had to serve 12 more. So you get this kind of inchworm effect, right? So it was kind of doing this. Your sentence was moving along. And each year, but we still front-loaded all of it because you got it based on being in prison. You didn't have to do anything.
You didn't have to take any classes, EBRRs, none of that.
It was yours. You got it. All you had to do was exist. That was it. Now, you could lose it if you got in trouble and you went to the DHO and you were sanctioned a loss of time, right? But that was it. There was nothing you had to do. You know, nothing. You just had to be in prison to get it. When VICLIP was passed in 94, they made a little change. And if you were a violent offender, you didn't vest. Well, I shouldn't say that. If you were a violent offender without a high school diploma, your time didn't vest. And that meant even if you had earned it and your anniversary had passed, there was a possibility you could lose some days still. 2 years later in 96, we got the Prison Litigation Reform Act that changed it across the board, not just for violent offenders, but everybody. Good conduct time no longer was vested, meaning you not only could lose your time in the current year, but you could earn time you already had on the books. And of course, there was the whole, if you didn't have a high school diploma and you were releasing to the United States, there was an exemption for non-US citizens who were being deported. But if you were releasing to the United States, you either got your high school diploma or you only earned 42 days a year. Instead of creating the carrot that FTC's uses, there was the stick of losing 12 days per year for the length of your sentence. But regardless, the only way you lost days was through a due process, disciplinary process with due process rights and appeal rights, because those days were yours strictly based on your sentence. That's the huge difference between good conduct and why we could front load it, why the Bureau could front load that time in, and FTCs, which are earned credit based on steps that the individual inmate has to do and has to keep doing. Like, it's not like a one-time thing. He has to keep doing, right, or she has to keep doing in order to stay not just in earning status, because that's the other thing that the Congress did, right? Is they created a requirement for earning eligibility, and they created a requirement for applying eligibility. So they created this kind of dual criteria, dual application, just to make things more complicated.
Yeah.
Which you and I complain about the complications. That's part of the problem with the statute, okay, which is a conversation for another day.
So, and I know we're being repetitive here, but I want to make sure we go over this in different ways.
100%.
And it helps. I think it helps us understand it as well as me understand me. So, okay, this memo came out.
I'm not going to make a case manager out of you yet.
I know, right? Good gosh. That's another show. How far I've come since 2015. Good Lord. So it's been 10 years of this. Anyway.
You're coming along.
That's amazing. That should be a step, at least a step seven retiree. Well, anyway,
just kidding. Continue to an exceeds evaluation.
Thank you. Yeah, no, barely that.
I'm saying. We're working on getting you there.
I take the fully set. So here we go. So there's this memo, and the memo says these, I don't want to say promises, but these new directives that the Bureau wants to take. And so if it does that, then a new calculator comes out and puts these together,
some of it's already there. Okay. So the issue. So if folks think about the current conditional calculators, right? We have a current, we have a conditional release date. We have a conditional placement date, right? Mm-hmm. What isn't there, which isn't explained in the policy or in the bureau stuff, but we talk about it a lot in our book, is that maximum benefit date. And understanding for the person earning less than 365 days, the maximum benefit date is their conditional release date. For the person earning over 365 days, their maximum benefit date is the conditional placement date. And the reason this is important to understand is the way the law is written. The law says a person can't apply the earned credit until the amount of time earned equals the remaining time to serve. So you and I, when we're talking to individuals, we talk about the scale, right? That old-fashioned scale with the two trays on both sides.
Yes.
The amount of credit earned and the amount of the credit earned and the remaining time to serve have to be in equilibrium. They have to be balanced out. So in order to do that, the Bureau has to figure out, which is why the conditional calculator is there, because they don't earn the credit until they earn it. But because of the way the law is written, the Bureau still has to know, what is that point? Where is that equilibrium? Where is that date, that magic date that is somewhere over 50%, right? It's somewhere over halfway where the individual hits that maximum benefit date because they need that for paperwork and planning purposes. How do you know when to submit an individual for halfway house if you don't know, have their conditional release date for the individual shorter? We have a client right now, that I was working on responding to and lost track of my time, and I apologize for that, that the date, the referral paperwork for the halfway house it included a conditional release date, but it included a conditional release date that was when he was earning 10 days. And then
not the 15.
And then the RRC, the regional reentry folks looked at his release date and they gave him a full, because he was recommended for 90 to 120 days. He was given a 120 day placement based on his release date at the time of the referral. Well, that was wrong. So now we're working with the institution. His 15 days he's now earning at the 15 days rate. So his conditional release date has changed again. And his right now, his placement date is actually after his conditional release date. So of course it's a mistake. So, you know, we're communicating with the institution and, you know, if we have to, we'll elevate it because that's what we do. But it's clearly wrong. But we had to wait for that conditional placement date to change because having them fix the date at when he was at the 10-day rate only partially fixed it. So it made sense to wait until his 15 days was earning. So therefore, the conditional release date with his new maximum benefit date was in place. That's again one of the flaws.
But because there's no calculator that factors in the 10 and the 15 and then applies that to,
because it can't, because it's not earned until it's earned. And so if someone is at the 10-day rate and something happens, hypothetically, you're a low-risk inmate. You're able to earn at the 10% rate. But before you go to 15 days, you have a bad day, right? And you get yourself in trouble and you get some incident reports, right? And that incident report or combination of incident reports, because you were really close to the low threshold, right? To the low to medium, those incident reports now bump you into medium status. So they can't project when you're going to go to 15 because going to 15 is dependent on you maintaining
clear conduct and all that good stuff.
So they can't just go, oh, well, it will be this. because the when you go to 15 impacts that release date for the individuals at higher secure facilities. They start out at medium. Go ahead.
So case managers really shouldn't. Now, this is a bad deal here. So are you saying then most case managers shouldn't put in the RRC until their 15-day status, until they're into the inmates in 15-day status?
Unless they want to do more work. And that's the problem. Again, this is the structural flaw.
But if you have a short sentence, I mean, exactly. You know.
By the time
a short sentence guy hits a 15-day mark, shit, the RRC referral should have been done, you see what I mean? Months prior to that.
And we've seen it. They've already got a date. And then we've had case managers, and again, so this is a complete change in how work flows, right? Back when I was a case manager, if I had somebody with a 12-month sentence, a 15-month sentence, at initial classification, I knew what their release date was. I was getting their information together. Well, when I started, we didn't have five factors. Those came a little later because I'm old. We were reviewing their release needs and making a recommendation. And I had them on my RRC list. And they weren't even in the institution 30 days yet because I knew, well, if I'm making a recommendation, you know, for let's hypothetically say back then the maximum was 6 months. So maybe I was making a 90-day recommendation. Well, if you got a 12-month and a day sentence or 15, let's give you 15 months, right? You're only actually serving a year, a little less than a year on a 15-month sentence. If I'm recommending 90 days, that backs you back to 9. You're already a month into your sentence. That backs you up to 8. I'm supposed to have my paperwork done at least 60 days prior. That backs you up to, now we're at 7 months. And I've got a caseload of 170 people. I'm not waiting to the last minute. You know, I was doing people's, and then you throw in things like, as you know, I have 3 children. All 3 children I have had while I was employed with the Bureau. I remember very distinctly my very first when I was pregnant with I had inmates on my caseload absolutely panicked that I wasn't going to have their halfway house paperwork done before I went on maternity leave. So when I went on maternity leave, I literally had every single packet completed for any individual, not that it was necessarily going to get a date while I was on maternity leave, but when I came back, because I couldn't be rushing when I came back, I had to have all these things done. So I was doing paperwork 6-8 months in advance of someone's release date because we had a predictable release date that the only thing that was going to change that release date was someone getting in trouble and going further out. Nothing was happening that was going to advance a release date unless someone got a sentence reduction.
Can't you just say on the 210, 30 days to 120 days or, you know, 60 days to 180 days and just say days.
You absolutely can. But here's the problem. If I submit my paperwork, now remember, you walk in the door, you get a good conduct time date. You're not getting your FSA date. Now, this is improved because of some recent changes. You're not getting your FSA date until you've gone to team or your conditional release date, until you've gone to team, you've gotten a pattern risk assessment done, your case manager has reviewed you and entered the assignment for eligibility.
And then put you in earning status.
Put you in earning status. Now, what was happening before, and like I said, recent change, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. What was happening before is it took about a month and a half because you'd come to team. And depending on when you came to team, you had to wait like a month or so after that. So it could take up to 60 days before you knew what your conditional release date was. Now, that's changed. They're doing calculations overnight. So as soon as an individual has team, hits their first 30 days, they're getting those initial calculations. We're getting that conditional release date. Case managers are getting it a lot faster. But on a short sentence, the case manager doesn't have the time at all to wait for 6 months, or if they're really short, three more months to where they get that new, right, that new data information. And yes, they do put a range on the referral, right, but if, when they send the referral, the date is this date, right? Right. And so I'm sitting in the RRC, I get the packet in front of me, I process it. I'm not going back and relooking at it.
Right.
So then you end up with this situation, and we've seen it a lot.
And you know, we've had clients that have had really short sentences, and thank God they retained us, because we gave them, when they did an orientation with us, we gave them some instructions on what to do on that first team, because not only are they getting started with their sentence, they're getting also started with releasing, and so a lot needs to happen 100%, on that first team.
100%. And then this ignores the possibility of the person who is sentenced in one district and is releasing somewhere else. How many times when we're talking to somebody calls us up and is looking at retaining us, that's what we want to know. Where were you sentenced and where are you releasing? Because that changes the timeline for starting the reentry. Now, someone who has that much time out, 24, 36 and keep going out, well, they're okay. The 10 to 15 days is less of an issue. But for the folks who are in that 12 months in a day, 15 months, 18 months, like as fast as things are happening, it's right, really a challenge. I will argue, and I will argue this all day long, this 10 or 15 days was one of the more stupid things that Congress did. It created a complication, and it's a real, you know, when you talk about, you know, I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on, we've all heard about DOGE and the efficiency and working smarter and things like that. When you tell a case manager, your options are wait until they hit the 15 days before you submit the paperwork. And then you may or may not get the date because now we've waited months and we know what the spacing is like in the halfway house. Or we do it early, we get the wrong date, and then we just request a change and hope that we can get it.
Right.
It's a no-win situation.
Right, because sometimes you don't have to do the packet again. All you do is you send an email to the RRM asking for a new date. Right? It can be that easy.
But But
some people don't even know that. They'll be like, no, you can't do that. Yes, you can.
Right.
No, or they won't want to do it, or they feel like that if they do it, they're putting themselves on blast.
Right. And sometimes, and you and I have seen different things. Either, so again, going back to pre-FSA, right, there were ranges. Mm-hmm. 0 to 90, 90 to 120, 120 to 150. You had ranges, right? And we see that still. And the first thing we do is we look at the 210, right? The referral. And we say, what was the unit team's recommendation? Did the recommendation, even with the change in release date, right? Is it still, if they just said we're recommending 90 to 120 days and the release date is correct, well, then maybe we're okay. On the other hand, if they said X date, because they did the math and they calculated and they're like, okay, we're recommending this date. We have another case, and it is, and I appreciate the frustration of the family. And you and I have we're still working on trying to get some resolution for this gentleman, this young man. The case manager submitted the referral, and on the requested, instead of putting a range, he put a date. But in the narrative, he said 180 days. Well, guess what? The date at the top was 6 months, exactly 6 months to the day.
From the old date.
And the 180 days. So the difference between 6 months and 180 days is about 5 or 6 days. And the reentry office gave him the later date. Gave him the 180 days. And we made the argument to that office. We understand, but the warden also signed off on this date, which is 5 days earlier. So you have two dates on the same referral. You have this date and you have 180 days. Why not give the individual the benefit of the 5 days? That didn't happen. Fortunately, the individual has moved institutions, and we are reaching, we have reached out to the new institution, and we're asking them, hey, we've tried this. Can you help the dude out? Just give him the 5 more days. Can you make a phone call on his behalf? Is it frustrating that the reentry office is not willing to like see obviously what's in print and go, let's just give him the benefit of the days. It's only 5 days. Why not? So that's kind of frustrating, a lot frustrating. Even when I was employed, you know, I always took the philosophy, like, do the right thing. Like, yeah. It's not hard. Give them the 5 days. Like, this would not be like a struggle of a decision, yet we're dealing with it.
Yeah, it's just,
you know. And like I said, the family's frustrated. He's frustrated. We're frustrated with it because it's just silliness as far as I'm concerned. But
it shows you that 210 needs to be done correctly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I would encourage any individual, any family member that's listening, one of the best advices you can ask, pass on to your loved one is ask for a copy of the 210. Right. Ask for a copy of his referral. It is not a document. It's a document that is releasable to them. It's in the releasable section of their central file. They just have to ask for it. And they should.
Right. And they should ask for it, right. And they have the right to have access to that document.
100%.
And if
they understand this process and can go back to their case manager and say, hey, I noticed you included my current conditional date, but you know what? My release date is going to change next month. You know, if you already know what you have coming, if you've educated yourself, and you and I talk about this, you know, we believe the best strategy is giving our people the knowledge so they can self-advocate while we're advocating. But they need to be self-advocating for themselves while we're internally advocating.
Please externally. Self-advocate as correctly as possible.
As accurately as possible.
Don't. Right, because we've got a couple people that are just like in like another solar system,
I know,
with their calculations. And with all due respect, we appreciate you advocating for yourself. But when it's so wrong,
yes,
right? So
yes.
Then you lose credibility with your staff. You don't want to lose credibility, okay?
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that we do is we provide folks the information and the right words to talk to their unit team. Because again, self-advocating is important, but self-advocating accurately is critical.
I gotta say that, when you're an inmate, I mean, you're the one doing the time. I get it. We get it. Like nobody wants to be in there doing time. And if I come across a calculation that favors me, I'm going to do it. I hear you, but try to look at just what the law says with the basic dates. You know, you have a couple of dates you're given on a sentence computation, you know, and then you can pretty well conservatively subtract
100%,
from there.
Which is why we did the book, right? I mean, obviously, you know, we can't talk to every single person out in the Bureau of Prisons, which is why we did the book. And we go through these things step by step. In fact, one of the things we do is we actually walk through the process of keeping track of your own paperwork, understanding it, asking for those copies, keeping your own central file.
Yes.
And then when you see a problem or you think there's a problem, how to ask questions, how to put it in writing, how to start that administrative remedy process if you need to. Sometimes you don't need, you know, I don't know how many times on the Facebook page we hear, you got to file
one. Just do a 2241. Yeah,
just do a 2241. File a habeas. Yeah. No, sometimes you just gotta talk to somebody and talk to them politely and professionally and respectfully, and not call them an idiot and say they don't know what they're doing. I mean, those are important,
right? Right.
And we talk about that.
So here's another. So we've today thus far on Around the Block show. anyway, we've talked about the First Step Act credits, right? And then how that gets factored back. We've talked about referral. Now, one of the things I think is really complicated, and it adds a lot of complication to the issue and a lot of heartache, heartbreak, sorrow, contention, people calling, being mad, all this other stuff, is when they say, well, now I want to add in all my Second Chance Act that I'm eligible for. And it says here on this sheet, I'm eligible for a year, right? Or whatever, whatever, of Second Chance Act. So if I stack that, right, and then front load that after I've stacked my, see what I mean?
Yeah, it starts to get really, really convoluted. So now here's what I will tell you. So under the previous director, she wanted the full 365 in there as the default so that people would understand what their maximum benefit is. Now, the problem with that is nothing, 0 days under the Second Chance Act are guaranteed.
Exactly.
Zero. Nothing. Nada. Nothing is guaranteed. The new director, their changes are happening with the worksheets. They are moving, and I think the decision was made they were going to default to 0 days. And then once your unit team made a recommendation, they enter those days, and then it calculates your stacked date. Your stacked date is the recommended conditional, not official until it's official. Stack date is the conditional community transition date once the recommendation is made. So if you notice, if a person notices or anyone at home that's had their family member send home the paperwork, on the worksheet, you will see under SCA, if it says 365 days or it says 0 days, and there is an asterisk after the number. The asterisk means the five-factor review has not been completed.
Huge piece of information.
Huge. Once the unit team makes the recommendation and they physically key in there the number of days you're being recommended, the numbers will change. So it'll say 120, or it'll say 270, or it'll say 60, and there won't be an asterisk there. Because it's now, so when the asterisk is there and you look to the little line below that, it says subject to five-factor review. That's what they're talking about. So while that number is in there, if there is an asterisk there, it is monopoly money.
It's a placeholder. It has no meaning, nothing.
It is zero. It is meaningless. Once the unit team makes a recommendation, they plug that number in, whatever that number is, between zero and 365. Then the calculator will take whatever the maximum benefit date is, right? So that's either just the release date, FSA release date, or it will be the FSA conditional placement date, add in the SCA days, and give you a new conditional transition to community date. But those days are still conditional, because the SCA days, in addition to the being subject to the unit team recommendation, are subject to community resources.
And availability, et cetera.
Bed space, monitoring equipment, staffing, et cetera. Budget.
Okay, so, which I'm going to open up this other can of worms, y'all. I'm sorry, but this is based on what our phone calls and what we're hearing. Okay, so I have this SCA possibility, five-factor review. Hasn't been done yet, but I'm a guy, let's say, I'm an inmate, and I'm married, and I have a house, I have a job, and my sentence was short, and I really don't have a lot of release needs. So does that mean I'm going to flunk some of the five-factor review and just maybe get a little bit of home confinement at the end, or what?
So, good question. And essentially, the direction of the agency, and this is kind of funny because this was what we did before FSA existed. If you were sitting in an institution and you had no real needs, you've got a home, you're going back to your spouse, maybe your job is still intact. You know, or you've got friends who have, like, three different people have said, we've got something for you, right? You don't need the residential services of a halfway house. Then the unit team would refer you for direct home confinement. And you would only get your direct home confinement. because that's what they referred you for. The problem is with FSA, because of this damn rolling release date that keeps changing, the home confinement as calculated moves as well. So what did the June 17th memo do? The June 17th memo said the FSA and SCA authorities are cumulative and applied in sequence to include home confinement. What they're telling us is, okay, you have a 12-month and one-day sentence. That means you have 36 days, that's it, of home confinement eligibility. We are going to take those 36 days and not apply them to your moving release date. We're going to attach them to what we know is going to be the release date, as long as you keep doing what you're supposed to be doing, your conditional release date. Now, everybody, June 17th memo came out. It was huge. Make no mistake, it was huge. It was the first time the Bureau put in writing that we are going to look at SCA and FSA cumulatively, adding together, and in sequence. Okay? Huge, including home confinement.
Which might mean stacking to some people, right?
Which might mean stacking. But this doesn't happen overnight. This doesn't happen quickly.
This is the government. This is the government,
folks. This is the government. This isn't like just parking an airplane craft, right? Like I always amazed when I'm flying in somewhere and they park that and they manage to roll that plane right up to the gate without hitting anything. Always find it amazing.
This is like
changing an entire battle group.
And look, I mean, this is an exciting era. We have a new director. We have an assistant director that, you know, is criminal justice informed and was part of the criminal justice system. We have Alice, who's a pardon, you know, who's self, you know, the pardon czar, who former inmate that we both had.
I tell you, she was on my caseload back at Carswell.
She's on mine too. Yes, we were there at the same time. So
that was
and that's exciting stuff. But guess what? They're part of the government now.
Everything
and the government
happens slow,
a little bit slower than you would like. It's going to happen. Something's going to happen, y'all. Look, we've gone from remember the pushing the button shows we'd have? Well, wait till they push the button. Well, now the button, we don't have that anymore, right?
It's happening overnight.
It happens every day-ish. Yeah, or over. So see how far we've come? And since even the show started, there's no more waiting on that 30, 40-day button push for everybody's credits to cycle in. So, you know, there is progress. It is coming. And we hope for progress, and it is coming with regard to this.
And the tools aren't even yet. They're building the tools for that conditional home confinement calculator.
8 minutes.
Yeah. I think we're okay. We got a few minutes.
Okay.
So they're building the tools. They're having to train staff. This is a completely different way to approach home confinement eligibility. Everyone there is used to looking at the computer, seeing home confinement eligibility date, and that's it. To see a home confinement eligibility date that changes every 30 days is stressful enough for people. We've got folks doing exactly what Bruce and I do. They're looking at it. They're looking at, okay, when's this person going to hit 30 days? Okay, they're going to hit 30 days right about here. Okay, well, that means this date's going to change by 15. And then I'm going to have, then he's going to be eligible for home confinement 2 weeks earlier than I thought he was going to be eligible.
Right.
And every month that's happening.
Every month.
So now we're coming to that point where we're saying, you know what? We're not going to rely on this every month changing, right? We're going to figure out what is the home confinement eligibility conditional. And assuming you stay out of trouble, you keep programming, you do what you're going to do, this is when you're eligible for home confinement. This is a win-win for everybody. This is a win-win, obviously, for the incarcerated population who are going to get to use full benefit of their home confinement. Right. Huge deal. But this is a benefit for the case managers in the institution, the case managers in the RRCs, the RRM offices who have been bombarded with calls and emails from the institution case managers who are figuring it out and saying, hey, I need to advance this guy's home confinement date, to the family members and the folks in Halfway House. This is a win-win for, and then on top of everything else, we're moving people out of home halfway house into home confinement, which saves the Bureau money, saves the government money. Always a nice thing. And we are saving those halfway house beds for those folks who don't earn time credits, who need to be in a halfway house. They don't have a home to go to.
Because remember, 65, was it 65% of the population?
65% of the population
is not, are,
yeah, at least as of the 2024 numbers, we're waiting for the new report to come out.
Right.
As of the June 2024 DOJ report, 65% of the population, like 90,000 individuals, are not getting time credits applied to their release date or halfway house, either because they're statutorily ineligible, meaning their offense, those 924C guys, they have an offense which prohibits them from getting credit, or two, they are medium or high risk. Right. And even if the credit gets applied, it gets applied late in their sentence and they don't get to maximize it.
I got a call from a, guy was a penitentiary. It's the wife, penitentiary inmate, worked his way down to a low, about ready to come out. And he got 8 months total community placement. And the guy's furious because he thought, well, I've been down for 15 plus years. I have a lot of community readjustment to do. And I had to
100%.
But right now, some of that bed space where they were going, the bed space was pretty tight.
Absolutely. So. And that's because FSA has undercut and undermined needs-based halfway house placement.
Because all those guys went, all those people went first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's, and it jammed up these other people that really, I don't want to say everybody really needs something, but these other folks that have been doing some serious John Wayne time. I mean, some serious time. That
serious time. You know,
needed that.
We got folks that don't even realize how many companies only accept employment applications from Indeed or some of the other online job sites. That if you walk in to apply for a job, they're going to tell you to go online and apply for it. And they don't even know how to do it.
Right.
Those folks need that. And that's what Halfway House was about. That's what
and the Halfway House has
placement is about.
And the Halfway House has a paid job developer on site to with jobs in the area, at least to get you started with a job. And back
we'll
in our day, you had to have that job within 14 days. Remember those days? You had to get you had to get on it.
You had to get on it. And you know, I remember when we first rolled out when they first rolled out the email system for the population. I had guys, old timers, that like they didn't even want to touch it because they were afraid they'd break something and then they'd get an incident report. And Trust Fund had to put inmate workers in every single housing unit. They picked them based on the housing unit. They had like two guys on each housing unit that could teach some of these folks that they had never touched a computer. You know, like those reentry needs are real. And when you've got when you've got folks who don't need to be there clogging up your system,
right?
And they can just go to home confinement. That's how we dealt with the halfway house capacity issues back in the day. Was we started talking about why are we sending minimum security inmates to halfway houses who have everything? Their family is intact. They're going back to the home they had before they went to prison. Why are we clogging up halfway house space?
Right. Exactly.
You know. That was the whole push under the Second Chance Act from 2007.
Correct. Okay, got about a minute and a half. Any parting shots?
There's so many thoughts. But one I will say is do not waste your time calling DSCC to talk about time credits. DSCC has nothing, zero, nada to do with time credits. They calculate sentences, jail credit, sentencing, concurrent, consecutive, all of those things. And we don't really talk a whole lot about, maybe we should do that someday, talk about how sentencing works. But DSCC has nothing to do with time credits. They calculate sentence comps, and then they have one team that handles designations. Hence the Designation and Sentence Computation Center. That's what DSCC stands for. Nothing about that involves FSA.
All right, then. Fantastic point and good save. Glad you remembered that. Well, it was another fantastic show here on LA Talk Radio, Round the Block, presented by Federal Prison Authority. And you can listen to this show on the LA Talk Radio site. It's also on Amazon. We're on Apple Podcasts. We also have First Step Act. We have our YouTube channel, which we upload this to as well, in addition to the other places on the YouTube channel. So you can see that here and see this show probably in the next 24 to 48 hours when my production assistant loads it up. What else? And so, yes, so we will continue. Please feel free to ask questions so on subsequent shows we can answer them, okay? Yeah, stuff is real complex. I know it's just a beating. I get it, man, and we understand that. But, you know, things are changing, and we're gonna ride this through with y'all, okay? All right. Well, then, have a blessed week. Stay safe, and we'll see you here next time on Around the Block. Take care, everybody. See
you. Bye. Take care.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.